Hello, and welcome to episode 244 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the upcoming Indigo Park, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And
how was that?
And yes, there may be a few outbursts this week because, he's a little bit tired.
Anthony's a bit tired today.
It's Anthony Esmond.
Hello.
How's it feel when I call you by your full name? Well, I left out Elizabeth.
No, you know I've got three middle names, so I'm not saying them just for identity.
Three middle names?
Three, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. Well,
moving on.
I'm in a new office at the moment. Every time my phone rings, I go for Riptide. And all these people are like, what the fuck is he saying on the phone? Just, I find it funny to say go for
And
Riptide.
I know exactly how they feel. That's how you answer whenever we start one of these podcast chats every week.
It is.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
Okay, you should have something like that.
Yeah. But
you should always answer the phone as if you were answering some radio quiz. Do you remember they used to ring you up on the radio, didn't they? And they'd say, you know, if your phone rings, you've got to say, I love Heart FM, you know, something like that. So you should always say something like that. I thought I was involved in a radio prize.
The only prize that we give out on this show is a lovely guest.
Yes.
And this week, he's been listening to this absolute nonsense and probably thinking, what have I done? But yeah, this week we're very pleased to be joined by writer, artist, podcaster, and much like us, someone who lives and breathes comics, is Pete Taylor. Hello, sir.
How do you?
Good to have you on.
Yeah.
As soon as someone says how do, they're all right in my eyes.
Yeah, got to keep the brand right.
Made extra special by the fact we were talking about a comic called Southern Bastards.
Did get me into trouble, right? Yeah.
Some people may have already heard Pete's voice before. I mean, he appeared as an interview in our Thought Bubble special in November. But also, you do the... What's that podcast you do? Oh,
God. Lakes International Comic Art Festival podcast.
That's such a grand name.
It's a grand name.
It's one of those classy ones, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I designed the logo, so they thought they better chuck me into the mix on the actual recording.
Yeah.
I did find out I was the guinea pig. I met Ian and Nikki at the festival. The first visit there, I think I must have been there 4-5 times now.
Right.
And they came to my table and they contacted me afterwards and asked me if I wanted to come on the podcast as a guest. So I was on the first episode.
Okay.
It was me and Charlie Adlard. So no pressure there.
Yeah.
But
just talk over him a lot. I find that's...
Well, it was separate, but they interviewed me kind of as a test run to make sure they were going to record Charlie properly.
Okay. They used you.
Yeah.
So then I think they felt sorry for me because my mine came out quite robotic. So they threw me a phone and got me on to yak about comics ever since.
Oh, nice. I enjoy your bits, man. And we've been on. I think you've got an exciting guest coming up, haven't you?
Have we?
Yeah.
Do you know, that sounds like our show because we don't know what we're doing from week to week either. We love the Lakes Pod. And Ian and Nikki, who finally got to meet a Thought Bubble last year.
Yeah.
And I'm putting it out there. We're coming for you for the quiz next year. I've already messaged them.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I listened to that. That was good. That filled
me. It was quite tense, wasn't it, that one?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. It was close, wasn't it?
It was very close. At one point. Yeah. We thought we'd lost it or you'd lost it. I was asking questions. But yeah, I've already floated it past Ian and Nikki saying, right, us versus you next year. So.
Brilliant.
I suspect they'll haul you in as a ringer next year, Pete.
Oh no. I was thinking we should create like tag team belts, Dan, out of cardboard.
Yeah. I think you can actually get proper ones made up. Maybe we should go for them.
But where's the fun in that, Dan? Why would you... Actually, that's pretty expensive as well. I mean, are you drowning in cheddar?
No.
Well, you know how we earn money.
Well, how's that? Is that through our lovely sponsor, Comic House?
Yes, baby.
Yes, they are what a fucking team. They are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. And God bless them. They're fighting the good fight, all in the name of independent comics. If you go on comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on the database. If you if you self-publish your own books, you can list your book on there for free. Start selling straight away. There's always... who doesn't want more avenues to get your book out there and selling more copies? Yeah. But we talk about it every week, and we're going to be using it probably more than ever for a reason that we'll be talking about in a minute. They have an app, and it's brilliant. It's chocked full of amazing indie comics, and the database is just growing all the time. What stuff have they got there at the moment, Dan?
New on the app, we've got Bertie the Bear and the Dagger of the Thousand Souls Volume 1, yes. Vanguard 17, North Star with Two R's Volume 1, Long Road Back Volume 1, Unseen Shadows, Blood Cries Out, and Blood Bears. Lots of blood and bears in this week's comics. So, yeah, three books.
That kind of week. But like, if you have digital comics out there and they're just sort of sat there, or maybe you've got some old comics that, you know, you've probably been making comics for quite a few years and you've got like some files just on your computer, seriously, put them on Comic House, because more people will read them. I mean, because the people that use Comic House just want to read comics, and that's the people that we want. That's the people that listen to this show. So yeah, it's basically like Netflix for comics. It's only £3 a month. You get access to the enormous library. There's none of this I want to read that, where's it gone? Like, you
I've got something exciting to tell you.
I met
Pat today, Pat Mills, for lunch, and I mentioned Comic House, and he said, is that like the Netflix for comics? No word of a lie. He said that to me. I said, Vince will be so pleased. Vince will be so pleased when I tell him that happened.
You know, just like that, an angel gets his wings.
The Netflix for comics, Pat Mills.
Oh God, yeah, Pete will use that in his marketing, you know, Will. But yeah, there's great stuff on there, and the database was growing all the time. So yeah, go to comichouse.com, find out more. There's a 14-day free trial as well, and just tell everyone about it, because we're all about getting more people reading indie comics, and it's a great
telling people today, haven't we?
We have indeed. We've been telling everyone. Yes, comichouse.com. Yeah, there you go. That's
made an infographic today.
Yeah.
He did indeed, just to sort of underline the point. Because before we get stuck into some wonderful comics, and Pete, feel free to jump in on this, by the way, because I think this is
Too, bro.
Yeah. Our first story of the day. I can't believe we're being topical and like news-like straight away. That's very unlikely.
Rarely does news break on a Saturday night, Sunday morning.
Yeah. Obviously, this weekend just gone, we've had anyone that's listened to this show will know that Comixology has been mentioned quite a lot, because who out there reading their comics doesn't use it in some way, shape, or form? Even if you read, you know, I think more and more people are moving to digital, at least for like, even if it's just one issue or something like that, isn't it?
I use it to catch up with stuff, and obviously we use it for Europe comics as well.
Yeah.
And travel. I mean, you know,
just
read it wherever you are. It's
And the amount of times that people have heard me on the recommendation section of this show say, oh, well, you know, just on my browser, picked up this on Comixology, and I read that. So many of my recommendations are through Comixology. That may not be the case moving forward.
No.
Because there has, as we talk, there has been a price hike on the UK Comixology, and it's quite a price hike. Now, who out of us knows like the full extent of what and why before we get into it?
No,
I thought it might be based on the exchange rate, possibly, because there was talk. I mean, Diamond increased their prices in comic shops, didn't they? So I thought it might be something similar. But
I also wondered about the financial thing, because I know a lot of the sort of investment financial markets are suffering because of the coronavirus at the moment, aren't they? Might be a bit of that.
I think this is a price hike that's been talked about for a little while, I think, hasn't it? I've been blissfully unaware of it, but it was a 66% price hike.
Fuck me.
And that's a fucking whack.
And it was one of those, as we're talking now, New Comic Book Day is Wednesday, so Tony, you got your One of the books you got, which is going to be your recommendation, before, without spoiling it.
Yeah.
Do you mind saying what you paid for that on the Wednesday?
Oh, I can't remember, man. For Strange Adventures?
Was it $2.99? It would have been about $2.99.
Might have been. I can't remember. It's a longer issue, that one, though. It's slightly longer. Black Label.
Yeah. But by the weekend, I think it was like $2.99, maybe $3.49.
That was the standard, wasn't it? For most new releases, it was $2.99. And then after a month, it would go down to $1.50.
Yeah. Or like an image book was on regular $2.49, wasn't it? I think, if it was an ongoing series sort of thing.
Yeah.
I looked at that same issue yesterday, and it's now $4.99.
What is that about? Yeah. Do you know what? You sent this link through to me, and I read it today, V. Yeah. And it was like exactly that time. I'd just been to Orbital and was in the graveyard that is Orbital. Mm. And I'd just gone into Forbidden Planet, and the shelves there were just an absolute mess. And then you text me saying, oh, you can't buy comics in Comixology now because they've like fucking doubled in price. I'm like, what? Who have I got to blow to get a comic these days? You know what I mean?
Email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
Is that bad? Are they trying to genuinely? I'll tell you this before we come on. Are they trying to fucking kill comics? Is that what they're trying to do?
I think
there's not a place in this country without a shop. Sorry, Pete. Go on, mate.
No, that's right. I think it's a direct dollar for pound comparison done now, isn't it? So if Strange Adventures in the shop is $4.99, it's $4.99. It's £4.99 pounds on Comixology, because the one I was looking at, the title I was looking at, I'd actually bought that day in my local comic shop for £3.30. I'm quite lucky. Good old comic shop in Comic Shoppy in Swansea. I think we are slightly lower than the national average.
Is that the name of the comic shop?
Sorry?
What's the name of the comic shop?
It's Comics with an X.
Yeah.
Shoppy, as in old English.
Gotcha.
Nice.
Right. I didn't realise that was there, man. I'm in Cardiff quite a lot. I keep meaning to go up and see John Tucker, so I might give that one a little visit one day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just opposite the Grand Theatre.
Right.
Absolutely no filing system at all, so don't bother looking. You know, you've really got to search for what you're looking for.
Yeah.
But £3.30. For an average American release, you know, Marvel, DC, Image, Dark Horse. And the same title was $3.99 on Comixology Saturday night. And
that's fucking bonkers.
That's the dollar price on the back of the book.
But even then, this is digital.
Yeah,
completely. I'm leasing the ability to read this comic. I don't own that comic. Yeah. That can be stripped away from me at any time. It's like, what's the expenditure here?
There's no in terms of overheads. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of it's ridiculous. And as much as I read a lot of comic books digitally. Most of the time, when it comes to Kickstarter, because of obviously postage and stuff, all you lovely US creators out there, I'm probably going to pledge for the PDF. You know, so I'm reading a lot. I'm reading a lot of stuff like that. But if you're talking in the long term, and we've said it many times, a PDF or whatever the digital format is. Isn't worth that. It isn't.
No, it's not.
No,
it isn't. And people say, "Oh, well, buy the printed copies." I love printed copies. My bookshelf is growing. That's not, you know, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying only read digital because I love printed books.
I looked at Knights Temporal, which because I've been buying and reading a lot of Aftershock, I thought I'll see what the next one is. So I looked at Knights Temporal on Amazon to buy the physical copy, and it's $16.99, which is a bit sharp. For like a 5-issue series or whatever it is.
How many pages would that be then? That's probably 130.
A little bit more. Pages, And then I looked on the digital and it's $16.99 digital.
Oh, fucking hell.
I don't understand the pricing policy at all.
No, I don't. I mean, the actual thing you're buying is produced as part of the process anyway. I mean, all of the books now are produced as PDFs. And they're going to be sent to the printers. I mean, so they're basically just, you know, ripping you off for something that they kind of already have to produce anyway. You know, there's no extra in the digital. It is just what the print was. And then they chuck it out and go, oh, I'll just sell it for the same. You know, somebody will buy it for
that. And the problem is it's too expensive buying, I'm going to say, at least a half anyway in physical condition. You know, in the physical version, it's too expensive, man. You can't afford. I bought 4 comics today and I didn't get much change out of a £20.
It is way too much. Yeah. It's just too much for what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to have like a new comic book day Wednesday, and sometimes I'd just be like, you know, buy that one, buy that one, buy that one, buy that one. I wouldn't go crazy. I wouldn't have like a £50 bill. Do you know what I mean? But you know, you could quite easily look back and just sort of say, oh, I've almost spent £15 there. And then you look and you've got like five comics or something like that. And you're like, oh, actually, that's all right. I'm not going to read them all now anyway. In fact, they'll probably sit in the to read part for quite some time. But now it's going to be, I've got a couple of titles that I want as soon as they're out. One of them I'm going to talk about, like a new title that I'm going to recommend later, and I've subscribed to them on comics. There's no one to be surprised when I say
subscribed to a couple of things. I'm going to reconsider that as well.
Apart from these titles that I absolutely must have, and these are titles that I later double dip to get the collections, but other than these titles, I'm really going to hold back. I think the only thing I'm going to do is do a deeper dive on the independent stuff, because...
And the sales.
The sales will be more appealing, because they used to be crazy, some of those sales. But like the independent books, if it was 69p before, it's 99p now.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. I always thought 69p was an absolute steal for some of the books you get anyway. Mm. But, big two books, I'm not going to touch them. Some of them we used to talk about how pricey they were anyway, and even image books and things like that.
You're pricing people out of the hobby. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And you're pricing people joining the hobby. So when a dad takes his kids in to buy some comics in a comic shop, and he buys them like 10 comics, and they go, "Oh, that'll be 40-50 quid," and he goes, "What?
What?
It's
one of those things of print media still trying to find their way with the digital landscape, because obviously they've got to be careful, because if they charge too little for the digital and too many people go to the digital, it'll fuck over the printed copy of it. But for me, this is a massive overcorrection. I really can't understand the strategy behind it.
And I understand, and quite rightfully so, some people are sort of saying, as they did on Twitter, because I've had a little bit of a discussion with some people, sort of saying, well, maybe, hopefully, this will push some people back into the brick-and-mortar stores to buy comics.
If they've got one, it's
brilliant, but if you don't have one, what do you do? You know, and then some people, and even though some people will sort of say, well, try eBay, try this or that, some people just might not want to go to that effort.
Well, the second-hand market on eBay. I just don't see that as a viable option.
The beauty of a new comic book day, or whenever you pop into a comic book store, was always that day, you know, getting it was new to you that day, wasn't it? Whereas it's like when a film comes out, sometimes if you don't see it within the first week of release, I'll wait for it to come out on DVD.
I thought the strategy was that you kind of, the paper ones were slowly going to slide back till the minority are buying hard copies, and if so, they're buying trades, and the majority of it are consumed on digital. And then they sort of seem to go on that track, and then Comixology have done this, and it's like, what do you fucking want? It's like putting the prices up on petrol to get people onto the trains, and then whacking the trains fare up. It's kind of
I mean, at the end of the day, they're owned by Amazon, and it's a juggernaut that probably won't listen too much to voices.
I think you're right.
There's no point complaining about it at all on Twitter, because might as well fucking shout the moon.
It comes down to like we've been saying, it comes down to your own personal choice, doesn't it? And what is that point where you go, right, forget it? Because for me, I was a big digital fan. Like you, I bought trades in the sale, but I would carry on buying a title then digitally. So they were all together.
Yeah.
And I will not pay, you know, essentially what is more for a digital comic than I can pay in my comic shop for a physical.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Which is now that it is absolutely crazy that it is more expensive to buy a digital byproduct than the actual physical book.
Some of it has got to be behind the fact that the comic companies are now struggling.
Well, it's another that you mentioned Amazon. What is it about the comic industry that they managed to put themselves into a monopoly in pretty much every situation, you know, because Comixology really is the only place you can buy, you know, certain publishers now. Dark Horse, I think, have still got their own digital store.
I haven't seen it for a while, actually. Yeah,
they have. Yeah. I looked at it tonight. Funny enough, right. I've got a few Hellboy. I've bought Hellboy in flipping every format possible. You know, there's some right. things you just can't not have it available at your fingertips. So, yeah. The trouble is their website's in dollars. So, you know, $3.99 is what it's listed at. But I think when I go through the checkout, if it's listed for $3.99, I will get it for less than that.
Oh, good. Okay.
Pounds.
Yeah.
So you can probably still get Dark Horse, possibly. I think they sell Dynamite. You might be able to get your Dark Horse books at similar prices. But, you know, the monopoly of only being able to get certain people from certain publishers from Comixology is going to hurt the people who are reliant on it, definitely.
Yeah.
And talking about Amazon, funnily enough, I did go and look for the book that I can't remember if it was Luke or Ben mentioned last week. You know, they were talking about the Chuck.
Chuck Hearn at the right.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah.
I went to look at that and... it was back in the day. Amazon started off as a website that sold discounted material. You know, you could get your books cheap. It was $11.99 on Amazon. There were a few people selling it sort of around the same price. No delivery charge if you Prime. But there's no discount there, essentially. It was at the same level. It's like, you know, DVDs now. They used to be able to get them cheap from Jersey, but now they're all the same from all of the shops.
Yeah,
and I think some of these retailers have now feel, right, well, we've got to the point now, we kind of own the audience, so we don't need to offer it cheap. They have to come to us. And I chose not to buy the book from Amazon, and I went, I think it was Blackwell's in the end. It was free delivery, okay. And it was actually 20p cheaper. But it's just, but you think, right, well, I'm not going to do that then, you know. I'm not going to take Mickey out.
It does come down to how long are we prepared to be treated like this and fooled to buy stuff like this for. And I think that's how I'm beginning to feel around Comixology and Marvel. Is I'm like diehard, you know, almost 50 years worth of reading Marvel, and it's like you're thinking, I'm just being, most of it's tut, most of the quality of it is like 75% of it is all utter shite, and I'm still buying it and I'm still a mug. But that price hike now, and it's just like really done me in. I have to say, I really became disillusioned with what the, you know, we've invested a lot of money in these people and we'd hope that they treat us well in return, but they don't seem to be.
For you to be saying that, that's a massive thing for me, because I don't know a fucking more of a hardcore comics fan and reader than you, Tony. So for you to be saying that, that's fucking turning you off is really like, they sure fucked up.
I'm sure there's lots of people doing that. It's almost like they're trying to do it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, sometimes. That's how I feel sometimes. With some of the books, I look at it and think, oh my God, what is this nonsense?
I don't know, man. It's such a strange time to be sort of in the industry. They seem to be self-sabotaging.
Yeah, they are.
I don't know why. I mean, I find myself more and more going to, well, we've been doing this for years, but small press.
Yeah.
I get my fix at small press because they seem to be creating a lot of interesting stuff. A good price. I mean, you can't.
I mean, do you use any other apps, guys? I mean, I use Isneo. I haven't used it for a while, and I started buying that. And there's a lot of English language stuff on there. There's a lot of Titan and Dark Horse and a few other companies, but it's mostly like the Cinebook products are digital on there and stuff like that.
See, I haven't really used any other apps. Comixology was my go-to. I was comfortable with it. You know, maybe too comfortable. But this will maybe inspire me to have a look.
And I use the 2000 AD one occasionally. It seems to be a weird one. It seems to keep changing. You have to sort of jump from app to app for the 2000 AD one. Do you use that one, Pete, at all? Or
I haven't used the 2000 AD one. I did look into, you know, those Korean sort of, I can't remember what they're called now, but you sort of scroll up with your thumb.
Okay.
Dean Haspel had Red Hook was released. There's a few, I think they were trying to attract a certain
webcomic-y type thing, or
And lots of it is quite manga and quite amateur. But I went looking for the Red Hook book, and it is quite a different experience. It doesn't feel like you're reading a comic.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel like you're sort of just on social media. But I can't remember what it's called, Top Carpet, something like that. But I had a look at those, and I've got Dark Horse. But apart from that, no, I haven't really.
It's definitely an interesting time, I think. For, you know, this is going to be an interesting year for digital, obviously. And we're not saying, oh, they've put the prices up, I'm not going to use them anymore, because like you just said, we're going to use them at some point.
I was using it this afternoon again.
Yeah. I mean, I still like using it. It's just the pricing's really pissed me off.
It's but, like every time I go back to my drug dealer, he slaps me around.
and then
we'll have some more drugs, please. And then I wonder,
it's the impulse buy that's gone, I think, for me. It means is, I know when I was waiting. There's one book I buy called Kaiju Max. And the Cannons.
Great book.
It's amazing. And I bought that from the trades. And I absolutely was blown away. It's way better than I thought it was going to be. You know, the humanity he manages to put into monsters is incredible. And I look for, when a season comes out, I look forward to that book dropping digitally, and I will buy it as soon as it's there. No worry about price at all previously. Now, with it, you know, with it being just principle-wise more expensive than a physical copy, I'm gonna have to wait a month and wait for it to drop to $1.99.
Yeah,
and we got plenty to read, Pete, on the read piles. Yeah. You know, we can wait, can't we? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they'll lose that revenue. And I mean, I've got read piles climbing out the window and going down the street, you know.
They do have a recently reduced section on the website as well. Yeah. And, for instance, Backtrack number one is $1.99 on there at the moment, and I recommended that a couple of weeks ago.
I'm tempted just to wait 6 months. Or even get the... What about Comixology Unlimited? Is that worth doing now, do you think?
In some ways, that... Dare I say it, it's a way to push people to get that?
Maybe.
Is that available now in the UK? Because it was only available in the States, wasn't it, for ages?
Yeah, it was for ages, wasn't it? I think it shows up on the front menu, doesn't it?
Yeah.
On the .co.uk. So I wonder if it is now. I must have a look into that.
Yeah, and maybe that's part of the price hike.
Yeah. And if you've got Prime as well, if you've got Amazon Prime, you know, some people go, oh, Amazon. But if you do have a Prime account...
yeah.
Just be aware when you're doing your weekly shop, there are comic books on Amazon Prime Reading that you essentially can. It's like a library. You literally just rent them out. So that's a great.
You can have so a number. Is it like five or six you can have at a time or something? Is that right?
I've got to look into that because we've got Prime and I never fucking do that.
Yeah,
there's
seriously,
some pretty good ones actually.
Yeah. There's a lot of Star Wars stuff on there. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Tyler Crook does an original on there. He used to do Harrow County and he's done some BPRD stuff. Yeah. There's one called The Stone King.
Cool, I've looked at the art. I like his stuff.
Yeah, and I think Richard Starkins is doing Elephant Men on.
Oh, I saw that. Okay. I wonder if that was new stuff.
Yeah, there's quite a few. I mean, I did look into that.
Yeah, but this was something obviously that I wasn't too sure about. Sarah Harris, I think, made it clearer online. Yeah. So
she sent us a little instructional thing to do it.
Okay.
So everyone go bother Sarah. She'll tell you how to do it.
I think ultimately all we can do is vote with your wallet and that's the only real power you have.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Totally. Yep. Exactly.
And get mugged off by Comixology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next week you're going to have to start paying for every episode of the Awesome Comics Pod.
I think the only reason we get those few listeners we do is because it's free. We put money on it.
That's true. So that's our little sort of digital rant. Obviously we'll keep you posted on things. Not that anything's going to change, but certainly you're going to hear us, it's available on Comixology, you should get it now. You're going to hear that again at some point.
Never say never.
Yeah,
I mean, we're discussing this in the Awesome Comics chat, so if you've got something to say about that, please mention it in the group.
Yeah. It's been a lively week in that chat today.
It has indeed.
Today has been like proper kicking off.
Yeah. And the other spot of business, before we get talking about some monkeys.
Some Taylor. Yeah.
You heard me. Is a little bit of Orbital news. We just wanted to...
Well, it's not really news.
Well, not news, but we wanted to state something.
It kind of stems out. We got a lot of questions last week. Even I got three people contacting me asking me what they should do about their books in Orbital. And I think, as I understand it, I put a post up in the which I kept sort of fairly, I don't know, straight and narrow. There's no hate on it, but I think, as everyone knows, Orbital is going through something of a change. The wonderful members of staff, I think the last member who dealt with it was Will, who dealt with the small press stuff, has moved on. I think it's a gosh, actually. So there's no one there dealing with the small press. So you may find, as a lot of our listeners have, that your emails are going unanswered.
Mm.
The only thing I can suggest that you do is you go in, either go into the shop or you ring them up and ask about it. There is some small press still in there. They're filling the shelves with the small press stuff on a couple of the shelves there. So ring up and ask for it back or ask for the money.
If I had my book in there, I would go in and get it. I'm not telling you what to do, but that's what I would do.
Yeah, I haven't got anything in there now.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of our listeners have. So just contact them and ask for it and ask what's happening.
Yeah. Sooner rather than later.
I can't promise you'll get a straight answer.
No.
Honestly. And I know they're in something of a flux in the shop. But
there's lots of red flags here. So.
Yeah. I would ask if you're listening to this on the Monday tomorrow for us, I would ask this week because I think. And Mondays and Tuesdays they're not open, so Wednesday onwards ask.
As we all know, stock, even if it's just one or two issues, is important to all of us because we do count the numbers. Sometimes we forget to, or we don't write them down right.
That's not me and Vince had a great dose of this on Troops.
Yeah, but we did make tallies. We did all right.
Yeah.
We'll get it down for Thought Bubble. What?
Yeah.
It's always wrong. For Nobrow, when I'm writing down, and there's like three of us selling books, it's always wrong.
Don't just write that in the book. You've got to write the numbers, Tony. Don't just write it's always wrong over and over. Like a crazy person.
It's in my diary, that.
Especially if I say, oh, he comes to so and so, I'll just give me this. And then it's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. What do we do? Yeah.
There's one thing I found. There's one thing I found that helped me at Thought Bubble. I still got my numbers wrong, but I've got the Zinio, you know, card reader.
Yeah.
And apparently I found that you can put your cash payments through that as well.
Okay.
Obviously they don't take a cut, but it becomes a record. So at the end of the weekend,
how much is going in?
You've got everything you've sold, whether it's cash or card, you can put through the same... card reading app.
Oh, nice.
So instead of writing it down,
however
anybody pays, then you've got a record of it. I didn't do it myself, but even I found it out.
Got
the wrong numbers, but somebody might have a better time.
Some cons it's easier to keep a record than others.
Well,
there you go, folks. Any of you small presses out there who maybe this is your first year doing conventions and stuff and you're researching card readers. You know, give that one a try.
It's pretty good actually.
Yeah. But anyway, from that stuff, onto comics. Finally, comics.
Yeah.
Pete, we've been wanting to get Pete on the show for quite some time now. Definitely. I mean, we've all spoken to him in some way, shape, or form, whether it be face to face or on a podcast or whatever.
Yeah.
And I know we're only gonna do about 25% of the conversation that we could have because the man lives and breathes comics like us. We spoke about it on the show, and some people know about the Seven Sagas of Silverbeard, which immediately is one of the best names you've ever heard in your entire life. But that was what you released last year. We spoke about it. Some people may not know about it, apart from the awesome name. But just tell us. I'm not going to say pitch it to us. Oh, I just did. but just tell us a bit more about what your comic actually is.
Well, it's not really my comic. I mean, the Seven Sagas of Silverbeard features a character that was created originally back in the 1940s.
Nice.
It was a very small comics publisher called Cat Food Comics. They didn't really have any great successes apart from Silverbeard, not particularly well known. You know, like lots of comics companies sprung up around Superman. There was money scented in the air, and lots of companies sprang up and disappeared, and the characters they created the same. But there was something about the Cat Food Comics that managed to stay in the zeitgeist, really. They came to prominence in the 60s, again, around the time that Marvel got its sort of universe together with the coming of the Fantastic Four. And Silverbeard was released, and it was their most successful title. And enough of the issues managed to sort of find their way over the eye, and a few fans still remember those titles. Unfortunately, with them being such a small company, the production values were really terrible, and there was even rumours of like toxic ink. Some people blamed the fire. Some people blamed the fires that destroyed their collection on this sort of this rumour of toxic ink. But consequently, they all were destroyed. There was no back issues of Cat Food Comics, which is criminal because they had some great characters as well as Silverbeard. There was Alan Exit, Doc Mayhem, Donkey Punch. There was all these kind of characters that, you know, really lived on in people's memories. So me and my mate Mark decided to kickstart with a Silverbeard book, who was always the best and favourite, the Simeon Swashbuckler. And we put the Kickstarter together. It went really well. I don't know if there were a bunch of people out there who remembered the character.
So I take it all the licenses, they'd all expired, had they? Is that why that was? Or
well, you know, like a lot, we're just assuming that he's in public domain, really.
Yeah.
And I don't there's quite a lot of characters out there that are public domain, aren't they?
We're going to talk about one later, aren't we?
Yeah, if someone starts chasing us, we'll just change the name to Barbary Ape or something, you know.
Yeah, this is Shades of Marvel Man. I feel a bit of Marvel Man.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to have to go to like Peru and track down some sort of like old comic creator and get the rights off him for the character.
The money you've made on the Kickstarter, though, you could probably do that.
It's all gone. It's all gone. But yeah, so the main thing with Silverbeard, he was a character. The Earth is dying and the gods don't care. They hoard the life-giving energies of the world tree, and the mortal realm below suffers. Across seven lifetimes, Silverbeard, a cursed guerrilla warrior, battles demons, monsters, and the blighted land itself to overthrow the greedy deities that would turn the planet into a wasteland. So he was a character that, you know, went through different phases. So he had, you know, he was a shaman, he was a buccaneer, and they all had quite a different flavour to the stories. So, you know, I read them
a bit like they're influenced by Robert E. Howard. I know a lot of comics about at the time. Well, I suppose in Edgar Rice Burroughs was a sort of similar reference point for a lot of these comics, wasn't it?
Yeah, funny enough, I wrote about it on the Kickstarter. There's a story of one of the early writers, Monty Fields. He had a visit to Mexico, and the very first appearance of Conan in comics was in a Spanish language Mexican comic.
Oh, wow, okay.
In the 40s. So right. That must have been in the back of his mind when he created Silverbeard,
right?
Which actually appeared, it was about 4 years before Roy Thomas got the rights at Marvel.
Was that 71, Roy Thomas, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was about 71. So it was about 67.
Okay.
Silverbeard appeared. So I do write on one of the Kickstarter updates that, you know, there is a possibility, Roy Thomas will never admit it, that, you know, Silverbeard actually inspired him to get the license for Conan at Marvel.
I'd love to see Barry Windsor-Smith on Silverbeard, wouldn't you?
Oh, man. Yeah. I was just reading one of the old Cerebus sword introductions I just happened to stumble across, and I'd forgotten that Barry Windsor-Smith did a sort of eight-page Cerebus short story.
Well, I think I've got that somewhere. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous.
Apparently he's got a book coming, isn't he? I follow some Facebook group, and there was some sort of rumour he's got something coming out very soon or something.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were lucky enough. I mean, I think there were some comic professionals out there that must have remembered Silverbeard, because Jim Mafood.
Oh, nice.
Did a pin-up at the back, and we've got
Love
Jonathan
Marfie.
Edwards, Warwick Johnson Cadwell, Nick Brokenshire. So, you know, as well as some of the indie scroll lords, we've got Mighty Nick Prolix.
Yeah, I like Prolix's one, actually. Yeah. I've seen Prolix act like that.
Yes, it's sort of cave painting style.
It's amazing. That's great.
So yeah, it was really great. You know, we hadn't really me and it's my partner in crime, Murderous Mark Hughes. He's got a backup story, and we're telling, you know, some of it's going to be a little fragmented. Some's just going to be what we remember reading, because you couldn't pick up a series back then. You know, you picked up what you could.
Yeah.
There wasn't there wasn't the ability to get the next issue sometimes.
It's probably like the situation where they had, where it was ballast in some ships.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing, wasn't there? You were lucky. You were lucky what made it over here. Even when we were reading comics in the '70s, you know, it's like you were lucky to get a run of comics. Oh, it just didn't happen. Yeah.
And you'd be able to buy those kind of like value packs, and it would be, you'd see what there'd be a pack of about five comics. You could see the one on the top, and you could see the cover of the one on the back. You had no idea what was in the middle.
It was always Captain Carrot.
Or Amiga the Unknown.
Human Fly. Yeah.
Mind you, I do go diving for the Human Flies nowadays.
Well, we were talking, me and Frank Robbins, Alpi, were talking about it. Yeah, saying it's quite an inspiration for some of his work.
Yes.
Yeah. No, the Robin stuff is amazing. Yeah. And he was a real bloke, Human Fly, with proper.
Yes. Yeah. Probably
even
evil, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, Silverbeard is such a rich story. Obviously, you've gone to all this work, and you know your history. Why do not more people know about this character?
I did make him up. He is.
Hey! Oh, you ruined that. It was going really well.
Oh man, you know that Stanley Hookster, character takes some keeping up.
I mean, without that, and there's listeners to this show who have bought the book and have probably just spent the last 10 minutes going, do they not know? Do they not know? But for those who don't know, yes, Silverbeard is completely fictional, like history and everything else, down to the Cat Food Comics guys, and it's one of the reasons that it elevates it above everything else. I just absolutely love the idea, because certainly when I first heard about it, I was bought in. I thought it was, because it's so convincing. The way you told that as well, it was so convincing, because we all know of all those, you know, all those old characters that are now, like you say, public domain, and you just think, oh my god, there was comics of this, and they're just being forgotten and by the wayside. What inspired you to not just create something that is clearly Robert E. Howard and Conan is obviously a huge influence. But what came first, the Silverbeard or the let's do something completely method acting, shall we say? Let's completely fictionalise the history. How did the whole idea come about?
It's a bit of both, I suppose. I mean, I've always read comics. I can remember it started with like Disney comics. You know, so I remember my grandma and grandpa would have a comic in my name or all the grandchildren, and we'd go around to their grandparents on sort of Friday night, and we'd troop across to the paper shop, and you'd pick up your comic, and it had like Wells written on the top. You know, back then when if you had an order in a paper shop, they would write the surname on the corner.
Yeah.
And it started with Disney. And then around the time, you know, I'd moved on to Marvel. I mean, it was just the next step. And this would be, you know, when Des Skin had started doing like
Hulk Weekly.
And I absolutely adored that. You know, along the way, I was reading, you know, What You Could of Conan and.
Yeah,
the British reprints. Everything was pretty much a British reprint.
I've got a feeling, because Conan had his own British weekly for quite a while, and then it sort of, didn't it join in with the Avengers or something?
Yeah, it got combined, didn't it?
Yeah. And but then it was in like, there was weird titles like Valor, do you remember, and stuff like that, and Conan would appear in that as well.
And they would, and you'd get sort of like, you know, tech stories, and you know, Night Raven, I think, was ended up
a few
tech stories in Savage Sword of Conan as well.
Oh, okay, right, that was a great magazine. For those who don't remember it, there was kind of two strands to Conan. There was the coloured Marvel monthly, which was not as saucy, but if you were like as a sort of a young man, I'd pick up a copy of Savage Sword of Conan. I think bloody hell.
This has got
a bit saucy all of a sudden. Yeah, it's a bit like that. Yeah,
but I was an ardent reader as well, and much like, you know, sort of comics. I don't know if there's a mentality of just collecting books as well. But when I walked into Smiths, and I could see that there was this massive, long sort of progression of like Tarzan books or John Carter books or Conan books. I absolutely loved it. And they all had numbers on the spine or the back, so they were a bit like comics. And I devoured the Conan books. And just around that time, you know, with the Marvel UK reprinting a lot of stuff, I was always making my own sort of characters up, and I was always drawing. And a lot of them were just, you know, knockoffs, you know, of characters that were a little close. But some of them, you know, I've ended up sort of tying into the modern version of what Cat Food Comics were. So it was a process of, you know, when you're learning and when you're growing up, and you find that there is a whole history to these things, and there's changes, and the characters were almost reinvented when a different creative team came on.
Yeah,
I was quite intrigued by the fact that the characters did become movable sort of feasts, and that they did change, that their, you know, outlook would change. You would have sort of Steve Englehart, when he was on Captain America, he became, you know, a bit more liberal or a bit more tortured.
Yeah.
And all this stuff just kind of became
something back that... then as well, the change in the creative team was an event for us. And I'm thinking about stuff like when Byrne took over the Fantastic Four or something like that, you know, sort of it was an event, because you knew these people would probably be on the book for a while, and you knew that there would be a key change in what they were doing. They'd take a different approach. And you saw that quite a lot back then. I think because nowadays we're used to sort of creators jumping about quite a lot, aren't we?
Yeah.
There's the odd one, like Mr. Miracle or something, you know. But, it was quite a big thing back then. And I remember, you know, the change, you know, Buscema was on Conan for so many years.
Yeah,
you know, totally. And it was so consistent. But reading the Barry Windsor Smith stuff was so different as well. It was just a weird, I know what you mean, man. Yeah, really interesting.
But for me, I suppose, you know, everyone's got that sweet spot. But by the time I'd kind of read all the Conan books, and it would have been, I suppose, slap on sort of early, mid-80s, when you did have John Byrne doing Fantastic Four, and Miller was on Daredevil, and, you know, Dark Knight was just around the corner, that was when I could get comics regularly.
Yeah, that was the opening of the direct market, wasn't it, around that time?
Well, exactly. I mean, so you could go to the comic shop, and they started doing things like Kazar, the direct market Kazar.
Was it Brent Anderson?
Bruce Jones and Brent Anderson. That was another, I absolutely adored that title.
Amazing, yeah.
And two of the characters that I've tied into Silverbeard were pretty much just Kazar and Shana knockoffs.
Did you ever read the Val Mayerick Kazar stuff?
Yeah, I've gone back, and that's what I bin dive for now is, you know, the old Barry Windsor Smith Kazars and, you know, all the stuff that nobody really wants.
Yeah.
But, these characters I would create, they would eventually, even though I might have created them of knockoffs, they changed. You know, my first D&D character was a sort of barbarian called Raucus. And he's now sort of evolved into being a character in the Silverbeard universe.
Sintra. It is fascinating for us to watch this with creators, and equally you, but also Larson does the same, doesn't he? He will often show drawings he had of Savage Dragon or
all of his characters. Yeah, that was like a high school character, wasn't it? Yeah.
So, you know, like to see that.
It was, you know, and I just did it all the time. That was what you did, you know. And my mates, we were into D&D, and we were into reading comics. And if we weren't reading them and we weren't testing each other on them, we'd be, you know, going to Manchester. It was, you know, back then there was like two things I would never miss. And that was my jazzercise class and the Wednesday release of comics. You know, that was all you had to. That was what you lived for. I mean, me and my mates.
Other size now.
We cycled to Manchester to get the latest issue of Alpha Flight because it was the issue 12 when they'd been advertising somebody was going to die.
Yeah.
And you know, we weren't going to wait. We couldn't get a lift. We couldn't afford the train. And we were in Warrington, so we're like 20 miles away. And now going the old roads and not the motorway is probably a lot longer than 20 miles there and 20 miles back.
Yeah. Bloody hell.
And we did it, and it wasn't in that week.
No!
You know, that was the trials and tribulations of a comic fan.
It was, yeah, because you didn't have a... Back before comic shops, you would just cycle around all the different news agents or, you know, this sort of thing, trying to find the comics.
You remember which news agents you could get what at? There was one news agent I knew I could get Warrior, and they had a stack of, like, DC back issues. So things like, you know, Giffen's Legion or, you know, maybe, you know, the odd Brave and the Bold. Yeah. There was another comic shop that you could get the sort of like old British digests. Do you remember they used to do a reprint of like Fantastic Four and some of the horror titles, but they were in like little tiny pocket sized black and white.
Yeah.
I knew there was one, and I knew everywhere that I could get each of them.
I remember when I used to go to the seaside as a kid, I used to like, oh, fucking hell. Like, it was like it'd open up to me. I'd all these different shops I'd be running around, you know.
It was always strange as well. Sometimes, like when I went into my newsagent and they would just have like one or two copies of it, you know, comics and stuff. It would always be a surprise to me, like the strange series you'd get. Like, you would think, like, oh, you know, even in the smallest ones, they'll have X-Men or they'll have Superman or something like that. But then you'd get a really weird sort of, like, I don't know, Blue Devil or something like that.
Well, what used to happen is that, especially with the Marvel consignments, you used to have to buy one of everything. So newsagents would get Spider-Woman, you know, they'd get Marvel 2-in-1, they'd get one of everything or they'd get two of everything. So if I didn't make it to the shop as the delivery hit the shelf, I'd be stuck with the comics that nobody wanted at the time, you know?
Yeah.
It was a bit totally like that, I think.
Yeah. I mean, and when I did discover that the local Smiths got, like, I think it was mainly Marvel. I think Marvel were consistently easier to get, I think, when the direct market certainly was just starting.
Yeah.
And I would walk into town to save my bus fare, because back then, you know, your bus fare could have bought you another comic.
Yeah.
And I'd pretty much buy pretty much everything that, you know, that was on the shelf. And it was a pretty good time to be reading.
I remember when I was a kid, comics were either 12p and then they became 15p.
Yeah.
And even now, I can multiply by 12 and 15 easily, because I used to work out how much money I had in my pocket and how much I could get.
Do you know, I've got my old, I'll have to dig them out and post them up. My old homework planning books. I used to nick a load, and I would put the sticker from the comic shop in the book and write what I'd bought. So looking through that now, I've got literally, it's like 35p.
Yeah, I did the same, mate. I did exactly the same. That's funny. Mm-hmm. I also used to do a little chart of who my favourite characters and favourite writers and artists was as well.
Yeah.
I had a little top five, you know.
And I used to read my big pile. I used to order them in terms of what was my favourite and what was my kind of least favourite. Yeah. And I would work down from, I started reading my least favourite.
Yeah, I did the same. To my favourite. Yeah.
The trouble is, I would sometimes, depending on the size of the pile, I'd always get too tired. So I'd have read the one I was least interested in with the most attention. Yeah. And then by the time I was getting to my favourite, I was falling asleep. So
you know what? I did the same. And I think I approach other things in life like that as well. I think there's a real psychological twist to my mentality these days, where I put off things that I really know I like. Yeah. It's weird, isn't it?
Or it's like when you get a meal and you're like, right, I'll eat all the boring bits first, because then I'm going to build up to the thing that
I treat, you know, girlfriends have been the same, you know. I'm still working my way up.
And he'll also fall asleep by the time it's
halfway through.
So obviously, you know, with this historied sort of reading comics and stuff, I mean, you look at all your back matter for Silverbeard. I mean, I knew immediately as soon as I saw it all, this is a guy that knows his comics, and it was replicating the stuff I would always see in those old comics. Because like you say, you'd be like, you know, you'd have like Stan Lee just doing his soapbox and talking about all these fantastic, wonderful things. You think, I don't know what any of this is, but I'm fascinated by it. I want to know more.
The not knowing stuff.
Yeah.
And jumping between issues somehow piqued my interest more than knowing that I've got a run of six issues. You know, if I just got like the odd issue of, I don't know, Ghost Rider in the middle of a run, I was like desperate to find out what was going on. Well, who's this? You know, sometimes it makes you investigate it more sometimes.
But there was every bit of the comic would tell you something. So even the ads for, you know, the wall stickers or the exercise books or the toys, there might be a character there that you didn't really know or hadn't seen, or a villain on the kind of coming attractions page, or, you know, the bullpens page.
Yeah.
They'd list a title that you'd not managed to pick up yet. So
they had a little list of what titles were out from Marvel. They had that for years.
So there were some of those you'd be like, oh, I've not heard of them, or I've never I haven't got that in my collection. You know, I've got Amazing Spider-Man, I haven't got Spectacular Spider-Man.
Yeah, there was comics I'd never seen, like Spidey. You know, is it Spidey Super Stories? Is that the one? Yeah. I don't know if I ever saw that on a shop.
No. That was Electric Company one, wasn't it?
Yeah, some strange ones like that. And you used to see them or Kiss or someone like that. You think, oh, I don't know about that. Yeah, it's a weird one. Yeah, and occasionally you used to see the Treasury editions, but you used to like desperately. Well, I remember seeing the Superman Muhammad Ali adverts and thinking, oh my God, I need this so badly. And then I never saw it, you know. It's like
the team up ones, Superman and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You only see those in the ads, you know, Batman versus the Hulk. It was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I did manage to get, I don't know where, I can't remember how, but some of the Treasury books.
Yeah, my dad used to buy them for me. I don't know where he got them. He was in the Navy, sort of travelled out, and maybe he got them there, but he used to turn up home with, you know, there was a couple of Conan ones, which were nice.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of Marvel team-ups, and there was the Christmas ones, where the superheroes would have a snowball fight at the end of it. Something like that. I used to love that stuff.
There was one, I think it was a Spider-Man Marvel team-up one, where he ended up teaming up with Ghost Rider,
right?
And there's one page in that I used to have to skip over because, you know, it used to terrify me. It's when it introduced the supervillain called the Orb.
And I love that character.
They got the origin story of the Orb, who's basically, I think he was a stunt man who worked with Ghost Rider's dad. And at some point, there's an accident that he blames on Ghost Rider's dad. And then there's a panel where he's had this crash. But then there's a screaming caption where he said something like, and he slid along the tarmac on his face for 60 feet. And they've got this kind of guy, literally, he's kind of... And then there's a bit later on in the story where he takes his Orb helmet off and he's got this hideous kind of zombie disfigured face. It's, you know, it's nothing by the standard of nowadays. But back then I was like, oh, I'm not looking at that page again.
I think the Orb's back, isn't he? He's in Ghost Rider at the moment. I know Jason Aaron used him a bit as well in his run on it. Yeah. He's a great character. Well, visually, he's a great character.
But, you know, those Treasuries were so massive as well. It was it was comics to the max.
There's the 2001 Treasury, I think, is over 100 quid if you can buy on eBay now.
It's difficult to get, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, one of the joys about buying and picking up old issues is something that I've rediscovered since, like, going to Comic Marts and stuff like this. Is,
we love it, man. You freaked at that first one.
Just picking up those old issues, and not only the smell of the dirty paper, as Taylor says, because I love the smell of the newsprint and things like that, but it's just there's nostalgia when you see the ads. It sounds crazy. Yeah. But the ad pages are hugely important to the nostalgia of comics. Obviously, we know the characters, we know the stories, but when you open up stuff and you just see like some of those ridiculous over-the-top ads. I mean, I even like, you know, the ones that are just, they look like, they're just like little boxes, aren't they? With just a little bit of text, like, you know, get
the little yellow boxes.
Grits. Do you remember Grit? Sell Grit. Yeah. Sell 4,000 boxes of Grit, whatever that was.
Yeah.
You got a bike.
Yeah.
I think it was fucking hell, I must do this. Yeah.
Sell the American chocolate seeds.
Yeah.
Three Musketeers. We're like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Do you know my favorite was the ones where you had back issues for sale in the middle pages? It was like a yellowed paper, and you think, oh, fucking hell, that's only $2. And I used to sit there and add up which I could get.
Yeah, and yeah, tick boxes.
My dad would say to me, yeah, but that's in America, son. You're not going to get them, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like my poor heart.
I always liked that picture. I'm not sure who the artist was. Like there was one of those tick boxes at the back in a Marvel comic, and it had Wolverine, and someone drew a load of kitchen utensils coming out where he's the blades used to come out. That image, God,
I remember that. But it also ties into like back to Silverbeard, because you've gone to the extent of doing like back matter as well as like these short strips. Like you've got like the toy. Sort of ads, haven't you? The wide beer truck toys.
Beer truck toys. Well, funny enough, having done it, you know, just for myself, I basically created this little army of characters, and I would do fake covers just for fun for myself with some of these characters.
Which is something that's come up at conventions, isn't it? Because you've had some of these fake covers on your...
I put covers on the table, that's right. So it makes it seem, you know, like, they, you know, these are... representations of what they used to look like.
Which is great, but then how many people asked to buy the comics?
I've had a couple, yeah. I've had a couple, bless them. And then I had to remember to put backing boards on them because people would turn them over and then they could see the kind of Got Milk ad on the back. Spoil the kind of effect. But over the years, you know, the fake covers built up just because I did them for fun. And the beer trucks were, that came about again, just I'd started doing a kind of weird sort of caricature style on some sketch cards because the beer trucks fit really well on a sketch card size. And I built my own, the very first one I did was a Captain Catfood beer truck paper toy. And then when the campaign started, I suddenly realized how much material I could pull on for the campaign. Yeah. You know, the fact that I had kind of almost invented this company just for my own sort of fun. I printed up some sketch cards, some Cat Food Comics sketch cards, and drawn 250 of them just for me. You know, didn't really post them anywhere, but that became the, you know, the kind of the army of characters that I would use in the adverts, the army of characters that I would use to back up the fact that, you know, Silverbeard existed, and because he existed, all these other people existed, Celia Fate and Sintra and people like that, they'd kind of get mentioned in the comic like, you know, you would have fellow Avengers mentioned in Cap's comic. Yeah. So, yeah. It just kind of accumulated just because I was doing it alongside other, you know, other comic work or other comic stuff or other stuff I was doing.
By doing that, it's an astonishing example of world building that I think, you know, you've created like a huge stable of characters. Yeah. Not just a huge stable of characters. For instance, you've got like a compendium like that describes some characters and stuff.
Yeah.
And you've even got little like stories about, you know, little biographies and things like that. So you thought about you even if it was just a doodle on a sketch card that became a character, you then had to go away and then think about what this character actually is. It must be immense fun.
Well, that's kind of, you know, it's what I would do it, you know, sometimes on a drive or when the girls were swimming or, you know, my daughters were doing all the dad chores, and I had all those kind of things, you know, when they did karate. So that's what I was kind of I was doing then, you know. I was filling my sort of time with what I loved doing. If I couldn't read a comic, then I was usually just noodling around, and sometimes it really was just a doodle that it would be like, "Oh, that's cool." And I also loved that kind of pulp mentality of actually having, you know, less sort of superpowered, but more. You know, Indiana Jones sort of style characters, and, you know, having adventurers or pilots, and less the kind of, you know, armored sort of heroes. And it was a chance to sort of explore those kind of archetypes and mix those. Some of them there's a boxer called Slab Serif or Slab Seraf, who I came up with in university. It was having to come up with I think explanation of typographic terms. So I did slab serif, meaning, you know, obviously it's the square bracketed serif on a character.
Yeah.
But so I made him a boxer, and I wrote this little bit, and they were all sort of like pulpy explanations. So he's now become, he gets remembered and he gets trotted out, and he became like one of Mike Wednesday's menagerie. And in the he became, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be funny if you mixed like Rocky with Flash Gordon? So he became basically a boxer that gets transported across the galaxy, and he's got to fight his way back through this.
Oh, that, do you know what, mate? Take my fucking money. That's just that sounds amazing. I mean, but the thing is, some of these, we all come up with funny characters. Sometimes we just draw them in a panel and just think, oh, yeah, that would be quite nice. But you've gone away and, like I say, written these little bios, and just reading them is immense fun in themselves. Like the one I see here, just for an example, people, just as what I'm talking about here, there's one called Lizard Archie. And this is the bio of him. A joke character introduced in Cat Food Humor Mag, Say Cheese. Archie was a piano-playing cultural dinosaur, much loved by later generations of writers. He was often included in stories as in-joke or background character. A 70s revamp reintroduced him to readers and added a rogues gallery of other music-themed monsters. Suddenly, Lizard Archie was hip again, daddy-o.
That needs to be a T-shirt. I want Lizard Archie on a T-shirt.
Well, that's the prime example of a stupid doodle in my sketchbook. And anyway. I drew a dinosaur with a kind of like, instead of one of those kind of, you know, piano ties, yeah. I drew it with like a piano key design going down his back as a fin. And he was playing a giant stone piano. So I just literally wrote Lizard Archie, cultural dinosaur. And then he did just stay and he just stuck and I would draw him. And then I ended up coming up with the idea of doing music themed monsters, and the other character I designed was Rock Monster, who was the kind of, he was the rock and roll long haired sort of heavy metal monster, yeah. He would pull trees out of the ground and then he'd pull the end off and then light it and smoke it like a cigar. And he was, I had more fun drawing him, but the fact that you had this kind of like,
you've got to do a, you know how you get like Vampirella meets like, no, Joe, yeah, and the Pussycats. You got to do Rock Monster versus Rock Lobster. That's got to be.
There's a Rock Lobster in my sketchbook. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, right, okay.
There's also a Rock Mobster. He's got the 30s hat on. But then, the way it ties in as well, funnily enough, this is another bit of, I've been putting together a commentary for Silverbeard, because there's just this amount of kind of stupid Easter eggs that are in there, but yeah. The humor mag Say Cheese, that was actually a comic I put together in English when I was in comp, right. And I actually won second prize in the comic competition for my humor mag Say Cheese.
Who won first?
I can't remember. I think it was Jim Lee.
Come on, he's a definite third place. Nice.
But so there's just loads of, so basically you're drawing from your entire life,
yeah,
and just turning pretty it much. Into, yeah, I mean, nice. What I love about all these characters as well is I think sometimes when we're creating characters and universes, and you know, there's that kind of sort of mentality of, oh, well, no, the rogue gallery has to fit with the sort of theme of the character. It has to, you know, they have to be as dark as the character, or they have to, you know, it has to be similar. Whereas you see some of these old characters and you'd have, like, you know, Captain America, and then you'd have some, you know, just the strangest villain just out of nowhere, just because they had to create something. They put, you know, in real life, they probably just had to create something in a week and just thought, all right, here's someone with a magic bag.
Yeah, but it's the old story about John Wagner, in it, he'd just turn on teletext and see what was on, and he'd go, oh, that'll do.
it's that real balance as well between, when you look at all of the characters in a comics company, there are some really, really cool ones, and there are some incredible, sometimes there's nowadays incredibly dodgy ones, and there's incredibly silly ones as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes, you know, Nort out of the, you know, Green Lantern core, or, you know, the fact that they have got a squirrel Green Lantern.
What's it
core.
Like? What's that one that Gerber did? Is it Elf with a Gun? I always forget. Is it Elf with a Gun? The one from the Defenders. Just crap like that.
Oh, yeah, completely. Well, I'm just Howard the Duck, you know?
Yeah,
Space Turnip.
Yeah.
Hell Cow. You know, I mean, Howard the Duck himself. I loved Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I deliberately didn't mind if, you know, if I came up with something silly. I mean, and that's why Captain Catfood, who's kind of like the, you know, the sort of black sheep of the comics company, really. The joke is that, you know, back in the day, DC would put a gorilla on the cover and be successful. So Captain Catfood Comics, their most successful character was the gorilla. So they went down the route where all of the characters were kind of, you know, like gorillas or slightly wacky that way. And they never had much luck with their superheroes. So the superheroes, you know, character is the sort of least successful But he was fun then to have, you know, just ridiculous sort of villains or characters connected to him as well. One of my favourites is the Mutatoes, which are the mutated potatoes. He's just, you know, if Captain America can fight Armadillo, then yeah. Captain Catfood can fight the Mutatoes. It's not much difference.
I mean, that's basically where Flaming Carrot come from, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that's kind of what those sort of radioactive adolescent hamsters or whatever these things. It's kind of where they were going with it. They were taking the piss out of what was going on as well, weren't they? You know,
and again, that's one step on, isn't it, from the fact that, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was born of sort of Teen Titans and Daredevil mixed with X-Men. You know, it was and that was the sort of, you know, zeitgeist at the time, and it all and it's for a comic lover, it's all grist to the mill. You recognize it and you accept it and love it, just as you would the gritty, you know, the fact that, you know, Daredevil at its peak, or
you've only got to look at, is it Hellboy was actually in his first appearance was in an issue of Next Men, which was like Byrne fucking being pissed off about X-Men.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that.
Yeah.
And look what that's completely.
Called. Yeah. And it's all acceptable and it works. It makes it even better.
Really, yeah, it does. Yeah.
That the Hellboy's first appearance was in somebody else's book. You know, it's brilliant. And it kind of doesn't happen as much now because everything is a little more controlled. Or you know,
it doesn't really happen in other media like that, does it? You know, you don't often see something born in one thing that appears in another thing.
Yeah,
it's not as common. But comics were like the breeding ground for that. You know, you even had something. Is it Demon Slayer and Devil Slayer? You know, that jump from Atlas Comics to Marvel Comics. You know, there's all these, the Scorpion and, you know, these sort of things. One character might have been created at a comic company that sort of fell out of bed financially, or that he fell out with them, and they would just change it, give it a different name and a slightly different color cloak and move it to another company. You know, this sort of thing happened all the time.
These days, Shaking Scorpion.
Yeah, these days, it's more like companies merge and, like, you know, at first you're excited because, like, maybe there's these characters you like joining a bigger stable of characters, and they eventually just sort of get watered down, or they just become, you know. I mean, I just think of like the Wildstorm characters. When they joined DC, because I was a reader of Wildstorm comics, you know, when they're about a night.
Your Authority was great, and
Wildcats and Grifter was a character of some substance. I know, people can sort of say, oh yeah, well, he's just a knockoff of this. It doesn't matter. I quite like the character, but now it's just what is he now? I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's just
fuck only knows. Dan was reading the Century's Best comic the other day, weren't you, Dan?
Yeah, fucking Bad Rock and Co. I just can't remember. Whenever I pick this up, I just think I can't even remember reading this dreck. And fucking shit.
It's because a lot of the time we didn't. We were just like riding the surf of nonsense that we were told was good.
Yeah. This was, everyone was saying this was good, and I was getting it, and I was, it's not good.
Why
the fucking Emperor's New Clothes?
Yeah. Sorry. We digress. Yeah. Just a lovely picture of Dan on the internet this week. Yeah.
Mm. Well, there's always lovely pictures of Dan on the internet somewhere.
You just have to pay for them.
The moving image.
So obviously, you obviously created this wild universe of Silverbeard, and it's a constant sort of evolving experiment. And the magazine itself is, you know, it's oversized. I mean, I've got a printed copy in front of me.
Yeah, I love the fact you've gone like almost, you've kind of gone magazine size with it, haven't you? I do like that.
Yeah, I'd done a few A5s for myself. Worked with a couple of friends, Adam Wilmot and Ricky Weber, and we produced a few characters. What Monster Kids was something we worked on together.
Great book that, mentioned on the show.
Oh, thanks. And that was, but that was an A5.
Yeah.
And there was something about having these A5s on the table that
kind of cool for a while, wasn't it?
They're great and they're affordable, which was really, I mean, that was the difference why this had to be kickstarted. You know, you can usually self-finance an A5. It's reasonable, you know, and lots of places will do them. But when I made the decision to go sort of US magazine size, sort of Savage Tales was on my table when I was developing it, and I just thought it would be it would stand out and it would just be fun to do, and you've just got a little more coverage. And you know, I was like, what the heck? But you know, it is, it's expensive to produce, but it, I thought, and then the black labels are, you know, have now become a little standard as well.
Yeah.
It isn't, it always used to be that thing that, oh, comic shops hate them because they're the wrong size. But, you know, my comic shop has just recently changed all everyone's bags in their subscription box to 2000 AD size because, right. You know, that change of size is becoming, you know.
I actually genuinely think one of the reasons for that was Midtown Comics because of the shelves they had in their shop. If you want to stock anything that was oversized, and I managed to get some comics and magazine size into their shop, they were like far down the end, and they're like one of the big world retailers.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you smashed your Kickstarter though, didn't you, Pete? And it was after that, mate. It's just dollar bill, isn't it? That's what you're about.
It was, you know, it was the first one I'd done. I didn't know what I was, you know, I really didn't know what I was doing. I think we were incredibly lucky to get what the little Kickstarter we love, sort of little heart thing.
Ah, nice. I think
that made, when I look at the dashboard, I tried to keep track of, you know, where sales were coming from.
Yeah.
And it seemed most of them were coming from Kickstarter. So I can only assume that because we got that little heart thing, that I think we stayed on the front of Kickstarter perhaps a bit longer than some people did. And it, that just really helped. I thought, you know, I did a lot of updates as well, and I did a lot of kind of world building on the back end, because I thought that might be, you know, like quite involving. But I don't know how many people, I think people just assume those are all about, you know, what's going out and when. And, you know, I don't know if people sort of read a lot of those, but there's quite a lot of sort of extra cat food sort of nonsense in those updates. And yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. It was, you know, it was really exciting. And you know, when you know what it's like when you've created something and you don't know what the reaction's going to be.
Yeah.
And this was the first thing that me and Mark had put together ourselves. And you're not putting it on a table like we've done previously and seeing people face to face. It was literally putting it out to a bigger audience and saying, you know, what you think. And to get, you know, the reaction we did and the response, and it was really confidence building. You know, I'd not really experienced, and to have people, you know, Vince doing fan art. And
yeah, that's the only bit I don't like about it is the quote from Vince on the back.
I'd never ever produced anything that somebody went, oh, that is cool enough for me to spend my time on it. You know, I was absolutely blown away.
It's great, isn't it, when you get that.
Fan art's fucking best. It's really good.
It was my favourite bit, probably, the whole thing. Just the fact that other people got involved to the extent that they would use their own time.
It was certainly created a buzz in the small press community, dude. I've got to tell you, yeah, everyone was sort of very behind it, weren't they?
Yeah, it was nice to see. It really was. It was an absolute blinding thing to experience, and I think that once you've been through it, all you can do is just throw your own weight behind, you know, the small press community in whatever way you can after that. You know, it's the way I feel now. When you've been through that, I will, you know, walk over hot coals for certain people. And as for an industry and for a crowd of people that you've now met in cons and you've now, you know, sort of seen and known over the years, you just realize what a special community it is.
Yeah, it is. And I think what I do as well is I look at the list of people who've pledged, and then I make a note in a diary of the of the people who haven't pledged, and I decide that they are dead to me now.
The thing is, he's not joking.
Some people are laughing. There's no joke.
Yeah. Me and Dan are laughing, then checking our emails to make sure we pledged.
Yeah. No, I'm joking. Yeah. But do you know what I mean? It really is. I mean, I said this to Lucy when we had her on. I think it's become a movement. It's not just a community. There's definitely an art movement now. And one of the reasons is because no one can afford to buy fucking normal comics. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like,
but it's, as you know, as a thing, comics, you kind of, I think, assume that you're pretty aware of. At one point in my life, I think I pretty much thought I'd kind of read everything, or you know, that you were aware of everything. And then each time you kind of turn another corner, or you find another creator, or you find, it's one of those mediums that is so prevalent, and people really do have the chops to be able to pick up and create. And then with the world the way it is, they can put it in lots of different places.
Yeah,
so you're constantly, yeah, you know, discovering different people and different, you
yeah
know,
you are, you really are.
I think there is something special to be said about the UK community as well, purely because we're a speck of an island, we're a small island. And therefore this community, it doesn't take long before everyone in some way has heard of you in some ways. I mean, right, we've heard it on, you've seen it on this show. And if we haven't heard from you, please let us know, because we're always on, everyone is always on the lookout for discovering something new. But with these other, you know, all the other countries, like the US, they've got some fantastic indie creators there. You know, you know, we have guests on that some people would never have heard of, and may never have even heard of, and unless, you know, we get them on the show and stuff.
Man vs. Rock. I mean, they're going to be in prison for a long time.
Oh definitely. And like, we'll have to actually sort of be witnesses. But because it's such a vast country, and, you know, just going from convention to convention, you know, thank God for the internet and things like that. I can't believe I just said that. But thank God for the internet, because everyone can keep in contact. But it's harder to keep a community so brimming and, you know, ticking over when everyone is so far away. But in the UK, we're almost, everyone's a bit closer, aren't they? Even like, you know, I'm in no way close to the guys that are up in Scotland and that fantastic comics community, but there's a lot of them up there, and they're all helping each other. That, you know, there's communities within this larger community, you know. And then like, you get a big event like Thought Bubble where everyone just meets up and gets pissed.
That's my liver still hasn't recovered from that one.
Well, you had two Horlicks and went to bed, Tony.
I know, baby. Yeah, then I got up and went home.
Yeah,
to give the employer a plug as well, I mean, the Lakes Festival is great for that as well. Because it's that sort of point of accessibility. The fact that it's free, I think, is a massive plus for, you know, for creators, that people are willing to, you know, wander in over the weekend and just have a look, you know, and they will usually find something that they're really interested in. They didn't necessarily come there because they knew about comics or interested in comics, but just the fact that, you know, once a year comics takes over the town for, you know, a good week, and there's events, and, you know, the town gets involved, and then you've got this clock tower full of, you know, different creative comics.
And do you know the strange thing about it is the indie comics and the small press comics community is the one that is attempting to grow the hobby, because Marvel, DC and Dark Horse and Image didn't give two fucks about the UK comics sales, could they? We never see them over here. They're never fucking really here. You know, it's like, it's the small press who are putting the effort in, you know, so the indie people who are running these, you know, like Nottingham and Leamington and True Believers and the Lakes and all these sort of people. These are the people who are like trying to keep us going, trying to grow the hobby.
It's putting different things in front, you know, as well. Tie-ins, I mean, Lakes are great because they've got the ability to try and encourage people. They've got the arts centre, so they'll use things like, I Kill Giants. You know, when that was out, they got the creative team over and they had the film on. So they're showing the connective tissue between, you know, some independent comics and the bigger mediums. And the different countries that they put the focus on, you know, they've done it on Scotland, they've done it on Canada, you know, and you get the creative types over from, I think it's, you know, lots of different accents that they put on the medium itself.
Yeah.
We're very lucky, and this community is awesome. Right, so what's next for the future of Silverbeard? Because obviously the book is out now, and you're having it at conventions and stuff. You know, you got shows coming up, or, you know, is there more comics in the pipeline?
Yeah, we've got number two coming.
Number two is in production. I've finished the script for Mark's backup, which is set from one of the old cat food annuals. It's a kind of Tales of Asgard style.
Oh, nice.
Tale, like before he becomes Silverbeard with Waylon, the Forge God. And that's called Troll Hunt. So that's in Mark's sweaty mitts as we speak. I've got the just about got the script ready for my bit. We've both just finished a kind of interim Kickstarter, which is we'll be launching soon. That's got the cat food character compendium. Mark's done.
Right, which is what you forwarded to us, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, some of that. Good.
We kind of do an interim one, just, you know, we don't ask for, you know, money to produce it, but, you know, we are, you know,
it's covering print
doing costs. A nice little small one that will hopefully help us just while we are doing the second one. And we've got a Silverbeard sketchbook. We've got the Mark's done a fantasy story guest starring Silverbeard. And then we've got this little pocket. It's a pocket guide to over 60 of Cat Food Comics characters. So that's hopefully going to be kicking off soon.
It's like an authorized history of the Marvel Universe, kind of whatever they call it.
Official handbook sort of thing.
Yeah, I like that stuff. People love that stuff, man.
It was fun to do, and you know, partly I was so pleased that of everyone's reaction with Silverbeard. I thought, well, I'll double down and I'll just dump everything else that's in my head right out there in the public eye.
And it adds to the universe. It's part of the universe. You're growing it anyway, aren't you? You know,
certain flavor, I think, involved with cat food comics. There's a lot of silliness, but then, you know, I think hopefully there's some cool concepts in there. And hopefully there's another project that I've been working on with the Skrull Lords.
Ah, cool. So for those that don't know what they are, did you want to describe what they are?
Skrull Lords. Yeah, cool.
Or is it a sort of secret society? It's like the Masons.
Funny enough, it's like a secret society. Skrull Lords came about in Kendal. So imagine this is late October, dark evening, and there's a group of small press artists find themselves outside a dark, sort of strange building at the back of a pub. There's Russell Mark Olsen. There's the mighty Nick Prolix. There's Martin Simpson, Gustavo Vargas, Murderous Mark Hughes, and myself. We don't know why we're there. We find ourselves outside this building at the back of a pub. We're staring at the building, and there's one poodle inside this building.
Oh, no. And is it end badly for the poodle?
Tish and Emily, the two Skrull ladies, they're a bit concerned about the poodle. So we break into the building at the back of the pub. Apart from the faint smell of French toast, the kitchen is full of twisted spoons. And all the next thing we remember is a weekend of debauchery, comics. There's some guy doing a twisted metal sculpture of Martin Simpson's face. It's all absolute carnage. And we wake up again in the same spot outside the building. And we've all got tattoos on our arms of the words Skrull Lords, all in slightly different styles. Like Russell's got this amazing kind of heraldic sort of device. Mark Hughes has kind of got some graffiti. I've got a kind of 80s heavy metal style Skrull Lords tattoo.
Did Prolix appear naked? Is that how it worked?
He's just wearing a bear skin. And the last thing we remember as we walk away from the house is that there's now two poodles in the window.
Now, the thing is, I'm never going to believe a single word you ever say.
My poodle is going to get put on a t-shirt.
Because, you know, I was in at the beginning of that.
I thought they just talked about it got into their Airbnb. I thought that was where that was going.
I mean, I'm 25% convinced that was just nonsense, what he just said.
Well, I think there's more likely 25% of it was true.
What a murderous row of creators, though.
Yeah, it was absolute, you know, yeah, they are. We are putting together a project, hopefully. I think getting all of us inside the pages of one publication would be absolutely great. They are an absolute Mount Rushmore of talent.
Are they all doing the Lakes tables are out, are they? I can't remember. Not yet, are they? Or
tables aren't closed yet. Yeah, I think you've got until the end of March to apply.
Right. Okay.
I think pretty much everyone is. I think probably the tattoos will call us back. But it was absolute sort of it was a blast of a weekend, you know, and everybody knows and loves and just can't wait to, you know, create comics. So it was a cracking.
I had a great time at the Lakes this year. And plus the fact that I killed it in the charity shops.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's a project that hopefully we're working on as well, just in the background. But you know, it's a weird thing to kind of try and tie into what everyone's doing, because everyone's at their own sort of stages of their own project.
Everyone's got loads going on, haven't they, of everyone. Literally Nick has sent me a page of something we're working on while we've been talking, so everyone's like super busy.
Okay.
And the other thing is we're both at Cardiff Comics Carnival. Are we? You're at that, aren't you?
Yeah. Are you there? Oh, nice one.
Yeah. We got a table. Which is the, I'm going to say off the top of my head, it's the 28th.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. It's a Sunday, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, me and Mark are up for that. That'd be fantastic.
Cool.
So, yeah, I mean, con-wise, I think, yeah, we're at Cardiff. I'm at Portsmouth.
Oh, right. Yeah. Have you done Portsmouth before?
No, I did have a table last year, but I couldn't make it at the last minute.
Right. Okay.
But I don't know if I've got anything then over the summer. But if
people want to read Silverbeard and your other stuff, like now, if they can't wait to a convention, how can they get a hold of it?
Silverbeard.co.uk will take you straight to the Big Cartel, and it's up on the Big Cartel. It's not really available anywhere else. I haven't got it anywhere else at the moment. But yeah,
Silverbeard. Well, that's just going to be easy for when I do the show notes. But seriously, folks, if you like comics, definitely go on it, man.
They're great. Yeah.
Especially now that we know that issue 2 is in the pipeline as well.
I'm well pleased, mate. I'll be pitching into that next Kickstarter as well. And it's, do you know what? I love a comic that's got a bit of fucking something in it, a bit of love of comics in it as well. And that's what this project is totally.
It's been a long time, you know, really comics. But obviously, from what we've been talking about, you can see it's been a long time gestating. But, you know, to actually, you know, start to do it, get it out there, get a really nice reception, then, yeah, we're absolutely made up and, we'll be, you know, pushing it out.
Once the train's left the station, it doesn't stop.
I don't know what we're talking about now.
Yeah. Well, there's so many answers I could give you, Tony. But instead, I'll just have to say this. Have we got any shout-outs this week, gents?
I've got two Kickstarter ones.
Go for it.
So Manifestation and It Just Breaks Sense One Shot is the new one from Mr. McCune. It's got 7 days, or we'll have 6 days to run if you listen to this on the first day of the podcast, and it's already hit 222%. But you know the thing with Stuart is he'll get it out to you immediately. It'll be great. Mm. Just amazing stuff out of Stuart again. And the other one is Camp VAO7, which is a new book from James McCulloch. It's a post-apocalyptic thriller, and anything by James is worth reading. If you go to the Kickstarter page, you can see some visuals. I got sent through some sample pages by the artist the other day, which I've not yet looked at, but I'm sure they'll be great. James is another guy I'll pledge to immediately. As soon as I see he's got a book out, I know he's a class act, so I'll get straight on it. So get on that. It's Camp VA07, issue 1. There you go. Okay.
Nice. Dan, have you got any?
I've got a shout out to G-Man. From Comics Anonymous.
Yay. He's 40 this week, isn't he?
He turned 40 this week, yeah. So happy birthday. He's been a big supporter for the show and lots of people's comics. And a past guest, yeah.
Yeah.
So go check out his site, comicsanonymous2015.wordpress.com.
He don't look 40, does he?
No.
No, God, no, no.
He's a baby-faced assassin.
Yeah, and me and him have got May coming up. May is Honest Comics Month.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Friend. Yeah, on its way again. Not worrying.
I wanted to thank Tom Sparks. He sent through a copy of Spring Hill Chat for my son. And my son was telling me about it as soon as I got him from the door, trying to take my jacket off. And he was like, Sounds good.
Amazing.
And you can get at tomspark.com/books-comics.
Cool.
So go check it out.
We had a nice little moment this week, didn't we, V, where someone did a Monster Spotters Club character as their book day kids character.
It was Rick Jackson.
Rick, it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, inspired. Oh, fantastic. Inspired by Monster Spotters Club, they as well book day, they went as a monster, didn't they?
We were so pleased about that. How good was that? Yeah.
That was brilliant.
Yeah. And go to Fair Spark Books and get a copy of The Spark, issue 3 on the way soon.
Thank you to all the kind words that people say about all the strips and our little work on it. There's plenty more to come. So
The best last line of one we've written so far is coming soon.
Yep.
Can I be self-indulgent? Our Kickstarter for Real Marvel, issues 1 and 2.
Get on it.
It's kind of floundering a little. We need to kind of shore up the defences. So, yeah, if you get issues 1 and 2, Kickstarter runs for another 20-odd days, and it's art by me and written by Ben Arrington and Luke Condor, which
what
we
more do you need? Shared.
Yeah, past guests. And seriously, folks, Dan's absolutely smashed it on the art. So
We've had a little look behind the scenes, and it's looking fucking ace.
Yeah.
It's hard to show, like, I've got one of those flat plans of like how I've got on every issue, but if you look at it, spoilers, so you can't really check it out. But I'm well into it, so
You're well ahead of it. You're ahead of the game, aren't you? 12.
Yes.
Yeah.
But looks amazing. Take me off the list. I've backed.
There you go.
And another, just a quick announcement, because fairly soon you'll be seeing more of my written book with Andy Blore, MI666, which has been long in justice.
Hey. Oh, nice.
We've almost come to the end of the artwork, and I'm in the lettering stage as well, so we'll be showing more of that, just figuring out like releasing and stuff, but
that's a dynamite title. That's the first time I've heard that.
MI666?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was called that.
It was it's a true collaboration. It was Andy had some titles, and that one immediately called to me. So, and then we've come up with something that's a little bit different. It's very much sort of it's a one shot that could also expand into other stories as well, and introduce some new characters that, you know.
The good thing about you, Vince, you ain't got much on at the moment, have you? That's a good thing.
I mean, this is one. I mean, comics are always they're never unless you're Dan Butcher, you can't just churn it out in a day. This one's been in the pipeline for a long time, so, and we're very excited to start showing stuff. It's another one of those. Don't want to spoil too much. But Andy's absolutely smashed it with the artwork, and it's just...
I reckon just release it and just like keep it all as covered as possible. Don't give away as little as possible.
Yeah,
I know. We're guilty of giving out too much, aren't we?
I'd like to show everyone the characters. There is a trio, and rather than go with the whole, there's a lot of supernatural stuff, obviously, with a name like that. But rather than go with the, here's a team and they're all young, fresh-faced new cadets, I wanted to create a team that was sort of like older, grizzled, and like, you know, they're not just...
Hang on, where are we going with this?
It's Grumpy Old Men, the comic. No.
I don't know about you guys. When I was creating comics, when I was younger, they would always be roughly my age, a little older. But now I'm older. Yeah. They're always older.
And slightly more bitter and cynical. I remember
reading an article that said that Superman was 32 and Batman was 34, and I thought once I got past 34, I was like, oh fuck, I'm older than Batman now. Shit. I'll never be Batman now.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. That's the only thing holding you back.
Exactly.
So stay tuned to my social media, because I'll start showing some stuff in the next.
Also, Vince, we can't announce, I don't think we can announce it yet, but you are involved in quite a high profile project.
Yeah.
Which I had a little meeting about today.
Yeah. Early days. Yeah.
But we were quite excited, weren't we?
But at the moment, I'm just in the stage of like, I just want to try and get it right and get it right for the client. Yeah. I'm not going to. Look, I was putting on my designer hat then. So,
yeah, you were. Yeah. It sounded all different, like professional.
I know. It's weird, isn't it? It's very unusual for me. but anyway, enough of that. Let's recommend some comics.
Oh, did you have any shout outs, Pete? You wanted to give out?
Or? Yeah.
No, I'm fine.
I'm very well versed with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, has anyone got any shout outs? No.
Scrollords.
Yeah. And their possibly fake origin story. Yeah, okay, who would like to recommend first?
Should we let the guest go first?
Yeah, Pete, Peter, take it away.
Cool. Okay, I have got an art book. As I said earlier in the preamble chat, I mean, this bit of the podcast always actually costs me a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it'll cost you more now with Comixology shooting the prices up.
Well, yeah, exactly. But cool last week, Luke and Dan did a blinder. Luke and Ben, sorry, did a blinder last week. I thought both of their recommendations were fantastic. But I am a bit of a sucker for art books, and I am recommending a book entitled From Shadow to Light, The Life and Art of Mort Meskin.
Yep.
Mort Meskin was an artist in the golden age of comics. And when I got into comics, I must admit, I was a little bit sniffy about the golden age of comics. I thought that the art that I was reading at the time was just a quantum leap past what they were doing back in the sort of 30s and 40s. But the older I got, the more I would go back, look at, and really reevaluate, you know, the stuff I'd kind of readily thrown to one side. I think one of the key sort of books I read was the book on Jack Cole that...
The Plastic Man guy, yeah.
Yeah. Who's the guy who did Mouse? Art Spiegelman.
Yeah.
He wrote a book on Jack Cole.
Oh, did he? Okay.
It's fantastic and really made me look at the stuff in a slightly different way. And then, you know, going back and realizing, you know, how amazing, you know, Will Eisner was always somebody who was instantly perceived as being amazing in my eyes. But going back and realizing there was a whole load of other artists. And Mort Meskin was one of those that when I picked up the book, partly because I did a few profiles of artists on the Lakes podcast. I did Jack Kirby and I did one on Steve Ditko. And this guy's name would come up and I just really didn't know anything about him. So I picked up this book and what I found was it was intriguing on three different levels. The actual art that he produced, and it's art from his career, so his art from his comic days and also his own personal paintings, and he did a stint in advertising later on, and you know he had chops. He was really, really good. He's perhaps most well known for working on the cowboy vigilante character and Johnny Quick, and he's put some pages together, the design of them and his use of light and shade is incredible. And then when you read the book, you find out the way he worked was to actually fill his page with pencil. So he started actually in a negative way. And then he would block out the shapes with... So, you know, you've kind of got this strange way of working straight off the bat, which gives you a different angle to his art. And then there's the whole history side to it. The era he was working in was an incredible, point of creation. Everyone was working in a medium that was really quite new. And the pressure that was going on at that time as well with the Senate hearings, you know, and the kind of implosion that happened in the 50s.
Yeah.
That brings the last sort of side of it, which is this really human story of one guy working at an incredibly pressurized point of his career. It's big, it's vibrant, it's new, you've got loads of opportunity, but it also takes long hours. It's a very intense art form. It's not particularly well paid. He's got the pressure of family and he's got the pressure of later on kids. And it's the story of him reaching a breaking point.
Okay.
it's a really great sort of story of how he actually kind of fell to the pressure. He ended up leaving the industry for a while, and when he came back, you know, he had a lot of support from a lot of the artists, but there's a tale of him sitting in front of his drawing board with a blank sheet of paper and him just not being able to start drawing. And then somebody came over and I think they basically put a mark on the page, and that was it for him. And then for a while, until he got back on his feet, he couldn't start with a blank page until somebody just put a random mark on the page, and then he could get back to it. So it's an amazing, you know, story on three different levels of great art, you know, some wonderful stories of technique. There's that history side of it, which I'm absolute sucker for, you know, that kind of period. And then you got this amazing human story of somebody who was a you know, real crucial part of time for the industry, how he got through it. And at one point, and I was really quite worried for him, but it is a story that I'm not going to spoil it, you know, but there is, it's a really, really, you know, sort of joyful end to it, really. It's a great book, and it's got some stunning artwork in it.
Cool.
Nice.
And I think
nice.
you had another one, Pete, didn't you, which is one I've also read today.
Yeah.
Do you want to do that one? We could sort of, I can sort of pipe in a bit.
The other one, comic-wise, because that was an art book, when I was in the comic shop, I noticed that it's actually, I'm double buying here. There was an album of Conan the Sumerian released, I think, some point last year. It's the French publisher. Is it Glenay?
Yeah, we deal with them quite a lot with No Brand. Yeah, they're a good company.
So it's really a really nice big French album. So, you know, you've got really nice big pages. It's a Conan story, Queen of the Black Coast, but it's got quite a more cartoony style.
Yeah, it really has, isn't it? It's hard to put next to someone. Who's the guy who did Air Boy?
Greg Hinkle. Oh.
There's a little bit of that in there somewhere.
Yeah. But it's just really expressive, a little bit sexy.
It does. It goes there. There's quite. Oh my God, what's going on there? Sex scene. Yeah.
We've got you know, a couple of pages of sexiness.
How you bring sex out for a couple of pages? I don't know, but you know,
it's quite different for a Conan. You know,
art style. It was more suggested and wind blowing and you know that sort of thing, wasn't there? But
And because it's French. There's a different rule of law for the Conan copyright in Europe than there is in America. So it was only released, I think, in Europe. I don't even know what the state of play is in the UK as opposed to the rest of Europe.
But it's not called Conan on the cover, is it? But he's called Conan in the book.
In the reprint that's just come out, there's an American reprint called The Sumerian, Queen of the Black Coast. It's from a company, Portland-based. I think they're quite a new publisher called Ablaze.
Yeah.
And they've got the rights. They've obviously worked with the Conan Properties guys and come up with a way that they can release the European comics in the States as well. And it's got the translation, so it's the full deal. So I can actually read the story now as well. But it's smaller. And it's been shrunk to the US comic size.
In I know we talked a bit about this before we began, but in different ways. So for anyone who knows a BD album, it's a different shape, isn't it, than a comic size page. There's different dimensions to it. And a lot, you see this a lot more in sort of Titan books and stuff like that, where they just put the page, they shrink the page down and put it onto the comic page. And you get a gap of whiteness at the top and bottom of the page. You get it a lot with 2000 AD reprints and stuff like that sometimes as well. But that's not for every page. Some of the pages almost have a full bleed on them. You know, it sort of jumps about a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very inconsistent. Some have got black borders top and bottom, and some have got wider borders on the sort of inner margin. So
let that put you off, because the art is outstanding.
It is. It's amazing. It really is fantastic. And I'm buying it. I mean, I've read the story, but you know, it's amazing, and I'd probably buy the trade as well.
Yeah, me too. And there's a little sigh of relief from us when there's an English version of it somewhere. Yeah. You know, because we're the same one here. We're buying French books and not being able to read them all the time. But and also in the back, it's got the Queen of the Black Coast, Robert E. Howard story from Weird Tales as well. It's actually got the text piece in the back, so you can read that as well.
Yeah.
Which isn't very long. It's only like 4 pages long. You know, a lot of Conan's stories weren't very long, were they? People think they seem to be novels, but a lot of them were just very short stories.
Yeah. Completely. And yeah, it's just lovely. It was really, really nice.
Yeah, there's some great scenes. The stuff with Belit. And there's a whole sort of single page with a sort of snake, underwater snake creature that gets chopped in half. It's incredibly well
done. Yeah, it's really nice.
So if you want some more Conan to go along with your silver beard.
It's weird, you know, because I also bought Conan Battle for the Serpent Crown today as well, which is the Marvel Conan in the Marvel Universe thing, which I'm like, okay, why am I buying all these Conan comics? But the Luke Ross art in that is actually pretty good, I have to say. I'm surprised how good that was.
Nice. Okay, who wants to go next? Dan?
I don't mind.
Dan?
Yeah, go on, Dan. Mine's a bit of a follow-on from last week. I fucking mainlined From Out of Darkness Volume 1 to Out of Darkness Volume 2. Cool. It's fucking dynamite, man. It's so good.
Yes!
Get round to it. I'll do it.
You really must. It's just rattles along. What the comic starts as and what it ends out at is just like... It changes so much. It reminds me very much of Kirkman's writing in as far as like issue number 1 to issue 5. The changes and ramifications of
but
things
the natural changes, aren't they? There's a fluidity to it. It's not like it's a completely different story. You're still following the same trajectory. It's just like it's another one of those you don't know who's going to die.
Yeah. And you like in the second book, I think, right, I've got an idea where this is going to go. And then it's just like a fucking handbrake turn. And you're like, oh, okay, it's not going there. And then it happens again, like another like dozen pages later. And you feel like, right, if the creative team stepped down on this, I've got an idea what I'd do with this. And it just doesn't go there. It does something wonderful. It's really interesting storytelling. I can't rate it enough. I'm really enjoying it. It's annoying that the last one came out in December because I've got to wait now for the next one.
Well, I think if you allow me to tag in to the rig, my recommendation, if while you're waiting, you should definitely pick up Outer Darkness Chew, which is the greatest crossover ever, as they say.
Yeah, I don't know how those two were crossed over.
I have no idea. Before going into this, I had no idea. I haven't read Chew. I know it has a legion of fans. I know a lot of our listeners are big Chew fans. And obviously that had a big following. It finished its story. I think it was like 60 issues or something like that, wasn't it? I think Chew in the end. Now, this is... John Layman is the writer of both Out of Darkness and Chew. And when this was announced as the upcoming crossover, I thought, what? But one of them's like a sci-fi, Star Trek-y sort of comic, and the other one is like a strange, like, crime procedural sort of book. I know they all go off in different things. I thought, how the hell does it say? And as it says in the synopsis, Tony Chew is a modern-day cop who gets psychic impressions from what he eats. Joshua Rigg is a 28th-century starship captain who flies through an outer space with demons, monsters, and ghosts. It sounds like the perfect recipe for a comic crossover, doesn't it? And it is. It's fucking brilliant. It's just... I read it thinking, okay, not knowing Chew, how am I going to enjoy this? Do you have to have read... You know, both.
Chew to get it.
Yeah. And you don't. If you've got, I mean, I think as comic fans, if you've been aware of Chew and what the setup is, you kind of know. I think reading Chew, will help you with some of the backgrounds for characters.
Okay.
And there's a bit of back matter, and like there's a sort of letter from John Layman talking about it. But this is just a brilliant. The Star Trek sort of comparison is. You know, it's a lazy comparison to sort of say that, but it is that kind of Out of Darkness has that. If you know Star Trek and that sort of way of doing things, Out of Darkness plays into that. You know, you're comfortable with what you get. And this just feels like, you know, when Star Trek would have a strange crossover or have a couple of episodes where it was a strange story, that is what happens here.
Yeah.
Okay.
As it says in the first page, it says, note, this story takes... Get this. This will tell you how John Layman thinks. Note, this story takes place during season one of Outer Darkness, sometime between issues 6 and 10. It also takes place after Chew, issue 60, but also during Chew, issue 18.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, shit, you know, that timey-wimey stuff. Yeah. You know, obviously, these guys have created these stories. They're not going to mess about with the timeline. There's no retconning of anything. They've clearly thought about this. This isn't just a stupid idea thrown together. One thing that is great is I know Rob Gilroy is the artist of Chew, and Afu Chan, who has shot up to being one of my favourite artists, is the artist of Outer Darkness. Mm. And the Chew bits... When you see Chew in his sort of timeline, because spoilers, Chew enters the Outer Darkness world. It's not the other way around.
Okay.
When you see Chew in his timeline, it's Rob Gilroy. The moment that him and his partner are are transported into the Outer Darkness world, it's Afu Chan.
Nice one. Is
doing that. So it's her okay. version. It's her version yeah. Of the Chew storyline. And it's just brilliantly handled. There was one moment that just made me laugh out loud. And it is one of those, you know, the editor's sort of like notes, you know, the little boxes. Because they've been pulled out of time and it's sort of, there's a conversation that says, you'll return us when we're done, right? You've got the technology to pluck us out of the past. You can bring us back, right? And someone replies, the technology, it's very complicated. Something a layman could never understand. And in the note, in the box it says, writer's note, it's true. I can't. which is a brilliant way.
So, what is this? Four issues? Is it?
Three issues.
It's not long, is it?
Yeah, it's not long. It's going to be I think, short, sharp, hugely enjoyable sort of crossover for both sort of fans. And as Layman says in the back, it's while you know for those people that love Out of Darkness, while they're waiting for the second season, because I think the first two volumes he's almost treated as season one of the TV series, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Because Outer Darkness had two volumes, one after the other. You didn't wait between the two. So I think that might be how we're getting this series. You get a couple of trades and then a little bit of a space. But while you're waiting for the next lot to come, you've got like three issues to tide you over, and it's just hugely enjoyable. I have no idea where it's going to go, and that's the beauty of Outer Darkness. So both Outer Darkness the series and Outer Darkness Chew, we're not sponsored by this comic. but we genuinely love the series, and
it's only like 12 quid I picked it up for 12-13 quid. It's not much.
It has rereadability. That's what I love about these comics, because sometimes I really love a series but it doesn't always have the I'd love to pick that up and read that again.
There were a load of variant covers for that issue, first issue, weren't there, of the new
I've seen lots of different. The one I've got is the main captain sat at a table and his crew are all around him dead. On the table is the head of the cyborg chicken, which I think is a main character in Chew, which everyone will know what I'm talking about. But it's going to be absolutely insane. But I think when it's all said and done, you can carry on enjoying what you were enjoying before, Chew and Out of Darkness. So there you go.
Nice work, sir.
See, we're a tag team with comics as well as quizzes, Dan.
Don't get big-headed. You're up against some competition this year.
I know. We're going to lose those cardboard belts we're going to make. So, Tony, do you want to sign us off?
Yeah, so last one. I'm not going to do I was going to do a bit of a deep dive on Strange Adventures, but I'm going to let it play in my mind a bit longer. I've got a lot of thoughts about it. I'm going to let it play along a bit. So the other one is actually, you might like this, Pete, actually. It's a bit of a sort of history of a comics creator in a way, a biography of him. It's For Real. Kirby Says Ask Not the Price, and the story's called The Oven. Have you seen this, Pete?
No.
I think it'd be up your street. It's story and art by James Romberger, and there's quite a lot of text in the back and some photo articles and stuff like that. It's quite interesting. From Uncivilized Comics in Minneapolis. It's black and white, 20-page story with extra back matter. Card wraparound cover, $6. Came out the end of last year. It's something that I asked Falpy to buy me when he was in town because I knew it was going to sell out quickly, and he got it to me. And I forgot to get it off him, and I only got it off him the other day, so I read it the other day. But it's a sort of short biography of two periods in Jack Kirby's life. It starts in moments towards the end of his life when he's ill and he's in hospital. Roz drives him. Roz is his long-standing lady wife, drives him to hospital. And I don't know if anyone knows this about Jack, but the story goes that his imagination was so active, he kept crashing cars into dustbins and stuff like that. Cause he sort of, his mind wandered and he couldn't concentrate on anything. So it's the start of it is quite quiet, quite poignant, very personal. And it deals with this trip to the hospital, and he gets taken into the one of those full body scanners where you lay down, yeah, put your hands over your head, one of those sort of things. But then as he's being sort of whizzed into this machine, it flashes to the story of Jack when he was in WW2. And he was, for anyone who knows about Jack's history, I know we talked about it on the show, but he was a rifleman, and he was also a scout because of his ability to draw. So they used to send him to the front lines and have a look over the German lines and stuff like that. So he'd draw where everyone was. Mm. And he was he wasn't a guy who just, did books on how to make a rifle, this sort of thing. He was actually on the front line. He was actually full on in the thick of it and was fighting face to face with Nazis in sort of bombed out towns. And the book really does show that. He was even on, I think he landed on Omaha Beach, I think, from the top of my head.
Really?
Yeah, I heard that before, yeah. And he talked a little bit towards the end of it, and he would tell people about World War II stories, and he said there was a lot of stuff that he would never forget. And I suppose we would call some of that PTSD these days, he would be sort of affected by it. And some of his later war books, I think, when he moved from Marvel to DC in the Bronze Age, the early 70s, he did a book called The Losers for DC, if anyone's seen that. And this is not The Losers that became Missing in Action 8 or whatever it was that Jock and Diggle did. This was like a proper sort of wartime WW2 kind of war story, and it really stands up. I read some of them again recently, really good stuff. So in this story there's a full-on tank attack. They launch an attack on a town, and there's tanks firing and bullets flying, and it doesn't hold back on the war sections. And there's a moment where Jack goes into an old broken down factory, and he's sort of in there, and he's looking around, him and this mate of his. They're ahead of the lines, and they're saying, what's going on here? What kind of factory is this? And they're just taking a breather. But while they're in this old abandoned factory, they're aware that they're within a breath of some Nazis, load of Nazi soldiers who are in there, and they're sort of standing behind columns as the Nazis walk past with their guns ready to fire. And it's actually a ceramics company, and there's ovens there in the same way that the scanner he goes into kind of, it's got that sort of parallel to it. And you can feel the emotions on both sides of the story. And there's what it does then is it has Jack in the scanner in the 90s part of the story, and the nurse saying to him, hold your breath because we need to take a picture, hold your breath. And as these Germans are going past in the WW2 section, you can hear him holding his breath because he doesn't want them to hear him. And it's really, really just amazingly well done. Very, very, very well done. And it also reflects on what Jack was like as a personality. So Jack sort of comes out, he lives through this incident with the Germans without having to fire, and they sort of leave, and him and his partner survive. And he also comes out the scanner, and he walks into the waiting room, and Roz is there, and she asks him how it went, and he just said, yeah, it was all right, should we get going? This sort of undramatic nature. He says okay, it was quite a tight spot, but it could have been worse, I think, is what Jack says. And you're like, okay, that's kind of very poignant about what happened to him, and about the art
situations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it plays very cleverly on that parallel. Mm-hmm. And the art is black and white, very, very sort of heavy brush pen, very sort of instinctual. None of the lines join up. There's no sort of full body, nothing's got a complete line around it. Very, very, very well done. There's a touch of the Marfood almost, but slightly more traditional about it. There's a very sort of instinctual look to stuff. I'd totally recommend it, whether you can find it or not. I don't think it got a particularly big distribution. The company are the same company that are doing a series called Ginseng Roots, which is Craig Thompson's series, if anyone's seen that. It's a sort of biography of Craig Thompson's growing up as a kid. There's the text pieces in the back, which are also really enlightening about it, because whilst I don't think James Romberger was a close friend of Kirby's, he did meet him on a number of occasions, and he talked about their interactions, and he talks a little bit about the history of what he did, what Kirby did, both in the war and both in the comic companies, and how his life changed because of it. James is mostly pastel artist, believe it or not. He works on a series, very sort of reasonably famous within the fine art world. He worked on some pictures of New York's Lower East Side. But he's also done some stuff for Paradox Press, Epic Illustrated, and he worked with Jamie Delano and stuff like that. It's a real moment. I'd love to see more of it, but I'm kind of happy that it's just one thing. It's just out there, and it's this lovely little moment of Kirby's life. And we all love Kirby. Do you know what I mean? We wouldn't be who we are without that guy. Yeah. If you go to uncivilizedbooks.com, you'll find a copy if they've still got some in stock. Really beautiful stuff, really good stuff. I would say the only sort of slight low point is the cover is, I don't know why, I just like, I think the cover, the colours on the cover are a little too bright, but the book itself inside is just beautiful. Really good stuff.
So nice. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. Tons of books for you to go out and check out.
Yes.
Add to your wish list. Spend too much money on if you're Pete.
I tell you what, I'm getting all those.
And from Comixology.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, wherever you get your comics, folks, we hope you enjoy them, and we hope you enjoy this week's episode. There's probably plenty more to come from Pete. I feel like, you know, we could talk for days about
Tom comics. Stewart's just sent me a message and says, can you say ball bags to Pete?
There you go. Of all the in jokes, there you go.
I forgot that part of the origin.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. If you want to know more about anything we talked about this episode, or if you've got any events or any new comics, we can't afford comics on Comixology anymore, so please send us some.
Yeah, send us our comics.
You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. And we'll be retweeting, we'll be talking about stuff. Who knows? Let's keep the conversation going. And you can also keep the conversation going on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, as well as the community group Awesome Comics Talk, which is a fantastic group of people on there. Just talk about comics. There's no hard selling of you know, comics or Kickstarters or anything like that. It's just people that just want to talk about comics. Maybe it's advice. Maybe it's events. Yeah. Maybe it's just, have you seen this? This is ace. Then all is welcome on Awesome Comics Talk, and me, Dan, and Tony are the administrators. So
I've not had much. I usually put a few things on there, but everyone's been rattling on their own this week.
Yeah. Like I said, it did get a bit lively. Also, the portrait competition. I'm gonna leave it up for a couple more days. I think I'm gonna shut it on Wednesday.
Nice.
So thanks for your name, Dan.
I signed up for that, didn't I? Yeah, I did sign up.
You did indeed. Yeah.
Lovely. That's gonna be a good one to see. Because there's art threads and stuff on there as well, and that's always brilliant to see. So yeah, thank you very much for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review, and just generally get the word out about the show, because we love comics and we want more people to know about these brilliant comics, books and everything that we talk about every week. If you listen to us on any of the networks, Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what are the networks we on, Tony?
We're also on Pod. We will never do a musical episode.
Fucking A.
Yeah.
That ain't happening.
It ain't happening. Don't ask for it. You will not get it. This is not Burger King. You will have it however we give it to you.
Doesn't rule out a puppet episode.
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, that's great for an audio medium, isn't it?
We're doing one right now.
Oh, dear. Yes. So, yeah, thank you for whatever network you listen to us. Thank you very, very much. And go back and listen to our old episodes. With nothing sequential on this show, you know, apart from how cool we are. It's really, really late, folks. I'm really sorry about that. Anyway, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
everyoneanything.blogspot.com. May is fast coming. Honest Comics Month. Get with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or everyoneanything.
Have you got your bunker ready? Have you got your bunker and the Kevlar vest? You've got the Kevlar, yeah?
I'm still getting hate mail from one person. And everyoneanything.bigcartel.com if you want to buy something that I've made. I must, one day somebody will buy something and I'll be happy.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah.
Seriously, buys comics. Yeah. Where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice. And also check out the El Marvo Kickstarter, because that's where you'll
yes.
find even
please
more.
Please do.
I have. Stuff. I've pledged. Get behind it.
You ledge.
Yeah.
And you can find me on the socials at Jester Diablo, where I'll be posting up artwork, old, new, whatever. It's all going to happen. And yeah. sometimes pictures of my cats. Pete, where can people find you and your marvellous comics?
I am This Man Is Pete on Twitter and Instagram. There's links to my website and comics at thismanispete.com.
There you go. Nice. Go forth, check it out. Get ready for some simian swashbuckling.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And yeah, who knows what will happen next week? And yeah, as we roll on to episode 250. No.
Almost there. Yeah. Almost there.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Not
yeah.
the fucking musical episode, you wankers.
What I love about this, Tony's the one that on air is getting aggressive, but I'm the one that was aggressive on social media.
You're the one who
Jesus
went.
Christ.
Yeah. I just laughed out loud when somebody said, oh, why don't you do a musical episode? And you just went, no, fuck off.
Yeah. I love dropping a truth bomb now and then.
Yeah.
I think I did follow up with agreed. Fuck off.
Yeah. No musicals, but we do love you, lovely listeners. So thank you very much for listening. Go forth, read loads of comics, wherever you get them. We don't care as long as you're reading cool comics and let us know about it. And from Dan, Tony, Pete, and myself, have a brilliant week. And as always, what do?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome. Stay
awesome. Just stay awesome. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya. Thanks.